From the heart of the Forest City, focusing on the biggest stories in London, this is the Craig Needles Podcast. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It's the Craig Needles Podcast, and it is time for the Friday Roundtable here at ClassicRock981.com and LondonNewsToday.ca. Back from vacation for me. I was away with the family for a few days, got down to the sunny south to visit my sister and, perhaps more importantly, catch a couple of ball games. That was really good, and got to the zoo and the whole thing. So this is our second Friday Roundtable from the Covent Garden Market Studios. We lost a little momentum because just the vacation time. That's okay. We are happy to be joined here in the studio by political insider Ryan Goss, Jennifer Dunn, the executive director of the London Abuse Women's Center, and activist Mojde Cox. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here today.
Hey there.
Hello.
Thank you for having us. Great studio.
It's so nice comfy. Space.
It's much more comfortable, I have to say.
No dispute there.
And it helps that you're glowing with all the vacation time you had. So this is.
Let me tell you about the glow.
We're calling it a glow. But.
So here's what happened with the glow. We had a beach day on the Saturday when we were there. I swear to you, I put sunscreen on myself and my kids four times each, and we all got burned. Yeah. Because you go from, A, I've got, let's be straightforward here, sheet white genetics, and B, you go from not seeing the sun in Canada for 6 months to like that blazing Southern California sun. It's going to get you.
No doubt. It's okay. Give it 3 days and we can be cousins.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll turn brown in 3 days. And we can just rock this city as cousins.
Yeah, I have to say the first question I had for Craig when he said he was going to San Diego, we were texting on something else and he's like, I'm going to San Diego. I said, first question, are you going to the Blue Jays game? So was it a good stadium? Was
it
everything?
It was awesome.
Yeah,
it looked like beautiful.
It looked amazing on TV.
So, and they just did a bunch of renovations in the outfield, kind of like Rogers Center. So there's like a playground for kids out there. Yeah. So the kids got to go out there before the game. They're hanging out, having a good time. It was really good. We had a great time.
Awesome.
And as always happens, whenever I'm away, crazy news stories go down. So like, I'm away and I'm waking up in San Diego on Monday morning. So it's like 10-ish your time when I'm waking up and 7-ish my time. And I see, a flaming train worked its way through London the other night. We're not going to talk about that. There isn't a lot to say about whether flaming trains are good or bad on a podcast. We're all opposed.
Very bad. Very, very bad. I recommend.
I'm against flaming trains. Let's talk about another type of transportation. And this is transporting politicians from one place to another. Pierre Poilievre on the East Coast decides that he is going to stop in and have a chat with his friends over at Diagonal. I may have oversimplified that, but that's essentially what happened. There's an ongoing protest at the border between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. There's some negativity going on there. He stops in, has a chat with, I think, a group of people that the vast majority of Canadians would identify as being an unsavory group of people. The question I have is this. Does this stuff even really move the needle that much? Only because we're not in election time yet. The polls say what the polls say. I don't know if I'm going to say the lead's insurmountable, but to me, the one potential issue that they might have going forward is if you shoot yourselves in the foot, you're going to cost yourselves this massive lead you have. Because I saw Daryl Bricker, the pollster, say it this week. The issue is not that Pierre Poilievre is popular. He's not. It's that the current government is having a hard time for a variety of reasons, some fair, some not fair, whatever. So if Pierre Poilievre's not popular, doing stuff like this isn't going to endear him to anybody. So Ryan, when you saw that he had stopped there and had a little chat, and full disclosure, obviously you work for a Liberal Member of Parliament, what was your reaction?
Disappointment, frankly, because here's the thing. I really dislike how, since Pierre has become leader, how he does politics. And you've heard me talk on the podcast a lot, and every party in Ottawa has its problems and can do things a heck of a lot better. But I've talked on this show before about how decorum is at an all-time low, how doing politics differently is but a fleeting thought and memory. And we are losing trust of Canadians every single day. Question period is nothing more than a circus. And frankly, there's no very, what I really struggle with in politics with amongst staffers, amongst the general public, and even amongst some politicians is that we can no longer agree to disagree with respect. And that really frustrates me because the whole reason I loved politics so much as a kid was because I saw it as a chess game in a lot of ways. But I always thought that no matter my opponent on the other side, I can always still find similarities and respect them and know that they want to see Canada be the best it can be too. And frankly, I don't believe that Pierre Poilievre right now wants to see Canada become the best it can be. What I think he wants to do is win and win at all costs. And I really think he's sacrificing integrity in doing that. To your question about, you know, does it even matter? I think it does matter, but at the end of the day, Canadians are really worried right now, and Canadians are really worried about putting food on the table, about affording their mortgages, about making sure they can pay the hydro bill. And I think the fact of the matter is that I think it's getting lost in those fears. But if we started to see, you know, the economy rebound a little bit, if we see interest rates get come down, if we start people getting that worry a little bit less, they're going to be tuning into his message a bit more. And frankly, the closer we get to an election, they will as well. So I do believe you will see the polls tighten.
So do I. I
really, really, really do. And I also believe very much that that the other parties, and the Liberal Party especially as the governing party, has done a horrific job at communicating at mass scale what about Pierre Poilievre really is. Because I will say that if Jean Charest was the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, I'd be telling a whole lot of my friends to pack boxes and get the U-Haul and get ready to move out of Ottawa, because he would have brought a whole level of professionalism and respectability to that party that I think Pierre is really relinquishing. I have to say that Pierre is not all bad. He sat on the same committee as my boss. He can be a good human being, but I think there's two Pierres. There's Pierres when the camera is on, and then Pierres when it's off. And right now, unfortunately for me, he is tapping into the worst of some, and that's what really frustrates me. And that's what makes me question every day whether or not I want to still stay in this job, because politics has become so darn toxic, and it beats you down. And the only reason I'm still here, and I've said this to the people sitting beside me, is because I believe wholeheartedly I came to this job for the person that I work for. So I'll stop there and let everyone else speak. Sorry, that was long-winded, but that's my initial thoughts on your question.
Mojde, when I say these guys are unsavory characters that he's chatting with, that may be putting it lightly.
Oh, for sure. But they sure know exactly who they're talking to.
Yeah.
And this is what, for lack of better terms, I love to hate about the Conservatives. They have shown consistency in knowing exactly who their audience is. They know who they're talking to quite well.
Right.
And it, you know, I'm not saying that other parties are not doing a great job at that. They're not doing as good as a job as that, as consistently as the Conservatives have over the years. What Pierre's doing, and I appreciate, you know, Ryan's comments around the worry in Canadians, you know, this is real.
Very real,
right?
I hear it, Ryan, every day in the office, every day.
Absolutely. And so, you know, even the rest of us panelists here today could probably relate to an activity in your daily life where you pause and think, what are others doing right now who are a little less fortunate and are far more vulnerable? What are others doing? I do this every grocery store run.
Absolutely.
For my big family, and it breaks my heart. So when you have this devastation in an environment where people are looking for a villain, people are unfortunately in high emotional times looking for someone to blame, and Pierre is tapping into that psychology quite well. And it's gross. We know when we're talking about Convoy and what had happened, who was there.
Oh, yeah.
And what their intention was. So does it matter? I think it does matter. I wish I had a mic and I could go to Conservatives and ask them, do you know what the carbon tax is and what the impact is on your household? And I'd be curious to know how many would actually know the answer to that.
Well, they don't.
Thank you.
And I'll be honest with you, and sorry to interrupt, but no. How many times have I heard that I've never got a rebate? This utter lie. Like, yes, you have. You just don't know what it was that went into your bank account, and you're believing all the social media narrative that you hear. But the fact of the matter is that the majority of families, 80%, are better off with the rebate than what they're paying. But
absolutely,
that gets lost. That gets lost in the Facebook fear.
And Peter came on my podcast, and he and I talked about that not long ago. I just want to say, I think that there are credible arguments against a carbon tax from the perspective of, hey, we could do this differently, we could do that differently, but like, you've got to tell the truth when you're making them.
No doubt.
And come up with a viable alternative.
And that's the other thing.
What is the alternative?
What do you want to do instead?
But they know who they're talking to, and that doesn't matter.
And it's the dumbing down of the discourse. Mm-hmm. It's
that's
the dumbing down of the discourse, and that's the result.
And I know a lot of really intelligent people that are aligned with the Conservative Party, which mm-hmm. surprises me when we have leaders that are lacking integrity to that extent, where they don't, you know, the way they treat media right now, the way Pierre himself treats media. Did you know that he used to actually work in media?
Yeah.
Like, the irony of this situation is...
Yeah, and the media is the bad guys and the whole thing. And we're about to, like, people are going to say, oh, this is a conservative bashing thing. No, this is bashing this particular thing. We're going to talk about Karen Vecchio in a second.
Sure.
And everyone's going to have really nice things to say about Karen Vecchio. first, I want to get Jen's take on, you know, he stops and there's the Diagolon flags and all these other negative slogans here. And, of course, Diagolon associated with misogyny heavily, including against Pierre Polyev's wife when they're talking about raping her. Like, it's horrifying stuff. And he wants to go in there and hang out with these guys. Again, this isn't like Jeremy McKenzie, sort of the top of the Diagolon pyramid, but it's still kind of troubling that this is where he wanted to stop his car. He didn't have to do this, Jen.
Mm-hmm. It's not. It doesn't look good, right? But I think, like, honestly, from where I sit, people are paying attention to this kind of thing, but people, I think you said this, Ryan, like, people are worried about how they're going to pay their bills and where they're, how much do groceries cost? So for the average everyday person, is there a lot of weight to this? I don't know. I don't know, but it does not look good and it does not feel good. And to have him associating with those people, it's, quite frankly, it's scary, and it kind of reminds me of some of the stuff in the States, and it's just like...
You took the words out of my mouth.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's scary. It's scary because what is that going to look like? Is he only worried about winning? Is he not thinking about other pieces? And I don't know, you know? Like, so I agree with what Mojde said. I agree with what you said as well, Ryan, and I think... Yeah.
You know, what I think Pierre needs to do is that Craig and everyone here is that if he really wants to show that he can lead, he needs to act like a prime minister in waiting. And what that involves is putting forward concrete policies, what he's going to do on issues that he disagrees with, instead of just yelling and saying and basically name calling, like, to your point, had become very common there in the states under a previous president that currently has a lot of legal trouble. If he starts actually putting meat on the bone, I think then he could really start tapping into those progressive conservatives. Because I got to be honest with you, as many people that tell me that they dislike Justin Trudeau, I hear just as many people tell me they dislike Pierre Polyev. But the question is, who do they dislike more?
Right.
And then it comes back to, frankly, folks, and it's always been this case, at around 10 years, people get the itch for change.
It's the swinging pendulum.
And no matter who you are, it's very, very hard to change that, and especially with a united right on the political spectrum. Like, when we had the Canadian Alliance and the Conservatives at that point, the Liberals could always win because it was broken, right? So if, hypothetically speaking, in the future, if the left and the center unite here and we kind of have a two-party system, which I'm not advocating for the record, but if that does happen, we could kind of very much see where I think you could have that party in power for several decades. But right now, under the current system, there is absolutely no way that we are going to that we're going to be able to get past probably that 10-year wall without just some sort of implosion on the other side.
And you mentioned the John Charest thing, and that's where I think this is interesting, is them going this way in the leadership race has kind of marginalized Maxime Bernier and company. And we've seen that with several by-elections. There's zero traction there, none. If it was John Charest, would the PPC have more traction, and therefore would there be that more fragmented right support? You don't think
no,
so?
No, I don't. I think that they would have that fraction with that small group that really likes to be loud and very angry and has a lot of, frankly, concerning beliefs and positions, but that fit into the PPC. But I think that, no, I still think it'd be a very small minority. Jean Charest, it would be that one of the, I think it would could potentially be the largest majority in history of Canada if Jean Charest was the leader of the Conservative Party. Jean Charest, like, I have differences with some of his political beliefs, but Jean Charest is like a professional. Like, that man is like my. The whole reason I got into politics was Cray Chen. When I grew up, that was a guy I looked up to. I loved how he did politics. I thought he was upfront. I thought he was funny. I thought he just did it differently. People disagree with him, but he was a man of the people. And Jean Charest has that as well. He reminds me of a sense of a lot of the same characteristics of Brian Mulroney, someone I disagreed with politically, but once you look back, there were several questionable decisions that Brian Mulroney made. I'm not glossing over that, but Brian Mulroney did a lot of great things for this country, a lot of progressive things for this country.
He did some great things for the world. Exactly. Like if you look at his position on South African apartheid, yeah. He was the first Western leader to say, we're not doing this anymore.
And if you look at what he did on climate change, he was really one of the first out on climate change, right? Acid rain, right? So I think there's a lot of good things to point to. And in time, like most leaders in Canada, once a couple decades has passed, their legacy looks much different than in the moment, right? So I think that Charest reminds me a lot of Mulroney as well. I just think he would have brought a breath of fresh air that would have appealed to a lot of people on the center right, the right, but even some people right in the center that like that kind of progressive conservative and want change, right? So I think he would have been, it would have been very scary for liberals, frankly. Yeah. Very, very scary. But I personally think that, frankly, I'm one that I always put partisanship second. And I always say that we need the best people in politics. And I think that he would have done a great job and had the experience. So just my thoughts.
Yeah. These days, it's pretty slim pickings. It is up to us. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. There's some really good people and some very bad people. It's fair. Yeah.
It's slim pickings. And I think it's up to voters to set the standards. So it's, you know, and it starts at the community level. London needs to learn from its own past, right? This area, if we want to talk about what's the direction that we will go as a community, we have to really assess, when have we ever fully embraced critical discomfort? Mm-hmm. That debate, that hunger for debate and rational reasoning is no longer, we have circus theatrics in politics.
I call it street fighting, Mojda. It reminds me of Mortal Kombat, that game we used to play as kids. Like, you know, like we can't just disagree like here on and have a conversation and say, hey, you want to go get a coffee or a sandwich? No, it's like you're now dead to me, and game over.
And better yet, a great segue, pluck you out.
Yeah.
If we don't align, even in the most, we won't even tell you that.
No.
Let's just pluck you out.
Exactly. Let's try to crucify you on the radio or on something else, right? It's just precisely. It's unacceptable.
Well, let's talk about the pluck you out that Mojda just referenced. And that would be the Karen Vecchio had been the chair of the Status of Women Committee in FIWO. Ottawa.
Yeah.
FEWO. Excuse me. Either way, how long has she been doing that? For 4 or 5 years now?
Oh, right? I think it'd be about five.
Election.
And to be fair, she got put into that role not wanting to go in. There was actually Rachel Harder, now who is Rachel Thomas, at the time was who the Conservatives had put up. And everyone else said no, based on some views that Ms. Thomas held. And the opposition voted her in because they respected Karen. And Karen begrudgingly, I think, at that point took it because she wasn't expecting to be chair. And I think personally would go down in history as one of the greatest chairs of that committee.
Yeah.
Full stop.
So, Jen, you've gone to that committee.
Was it 2017?
Yeah, I want to say.
That's a long time. Yeah. Sorry.
I was in the room when it happened. I was actually in the room when, like, Peter was subbing into that committee. I was in the room when she was appointed chair, unbeknownst to her, that she was going to be chair.
Well, surprise. So you've gone to that committee several times, Jen. Mm-hmm. Tell me about, you know, Karen has been removed from that particular role by Conservative leadership, and there's been a lot of negativity about that from outside of that, from people in Ottawa, from all political stripes, saying this is wrong here. What was your reaction to it?
I was heartbroken, to be honest with you. I really like Karen. I really do. And you know why? Because she shows up. Do you know how many times she's been to the London Abused Women's Centre? More than I could count on my hand. Like, she is so involved and wants to be involved with the women we provide service to. She's not like, she's different. And she cares. And the show up thing is a huge piece for me, because a lot of people don't, you know, a lot of politicians will say one thing and you don't really see it in their actions. And that's not with Karen. So I was heartbroken when I found out she wasn't going to be the chair of the committee anymore. She's done so much for women and girls in our community, in our province, and in our country. bottom line. And she's, you know, brought a lot of stories and information to Parliament Hill. There have been many times where I've visited her office, or there's been women who want to speak with her. You know, the first person I go to when somebody says, I need some assistance, or I want to talk to an MP or whatever, it's usually Karen, because she is a woman. She steps up. She constantly is putting her, money where her mouth is, or whatever. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, you whatever, say,
yeah.
Right?
She walks the walk and talks the
yeah,
talk.
That's a real, you know.
There's all and, sorts of things to say about colloquialisms.
Yeah. So I'm really disappointed about it. I'm really disappointed about it. And yeah, of course, like with any change, a little bit nervous to kind of see how this goes and what direction it's gonna, you know, take.
Because typically, when you go to Ottawa, that's the committee you're talking to. I would just, yeah.
Yeah.
Not every time.
Yeah. Justice to public the ethics, health. But yes.
Yeah.
Status.
So
you have a smorgasbord of committees.
I'm worried about it too. And I will say this. I have nothing, very, very positive things to say about Karen and my interactions with her over the years, and she's been doing this a long time, not only as the MP, but previously as Joe Preston's, basically doing your job, yeah. Ryan, in Joe Preston's office, and was very good at that job then, too. So I've got nothing but great things to say about Karen, and I'm disappointed that it's gone this way. I've seen speculation online that this was sort of retribution for Karen. We mentioned John Charest earlier. She endorsed John Charest in the leadership race. Is this retribution for that? I'm not going to sit here and say I know that, but that's the speculation I've seen. And there's other potential reasons why this would happen. But this was not done because Karen Vecchio was doing a bad job as the committee chair. This
it never
was
is, done, Craig.
It never is. Yeah. It never is.
It
this
never
was done
is.
For some other reason, and Canadians are losing because of it, and that's why I'm frustrated.
Yeah. And rightfully so. I think we should all be very frustrated. You know, these are glass cliff assignments that are given to women, even on the committees that are catered and geared towards addressing women's issues. At the end of the day, people who are not women are making decisions at a high level on much of this committee work. And it's very easy to hand over a glass cliff assignment to these politicians. We see it happening time and time and time again. Yet, we don't flex our voter power to say and inquire, what is your strategy around these appointments? How do you, you know, deal with debate? These are the things that as voters we should be paying attention to. So, you know, my message to Karen would be like, you go, girl. No. You know, it's take it as a compliment that they had to root you out. They couldn't handle whatever it is that you were bringing into the table, or if it was that you were pushing back on not wanting to comply with something that was against your values. You go ahead and keep doing your thing. That's my message.
Something I think to people in Ottawa, and you've both, all of you have spent more time in Ottawa than I have, and you've worked there most days, and Jen, you've gone there for various committees. We were just talking about Ryan, you've half worked there. Universally respected amongst people of all political stripes, Karen Vecchio, so, I think is fair to say.
It's more than fair to say, and let me crack my knuckles here because I have a lot to say on
yes.
this. So I am beyond frustrated. So you've heard me use a line, I stole it from someone else, but I use it often. Some people get into politics to be somebody. Other people get into politics to do something. Mm-hmm. Karen Vecchio got into politics to do something and do a lot of things, frankly. And she is exactly like my boss, Peter, on different teams, frankly. But they work together like they're on the same team constantly. Karen, Jill in her office, who does my job for Karen, is fantastic. I talk to Jill regularly. We are constantly working together on
Jill's
things.
Jill's great.
So we are constantly working together on things. I have a phenomenal relationship with them there. And because they look at it this way, there's a time and a place for the partisanship, but they want to get stuff done for our community and they want to get stuff done for her riding. And so who does she call when she needs help to get through to a government, a minister's office on an application? She calls Peter, and we have those conversations. And of course we're going to help, because a win for Karen is a win for our area. It's a win for all of us. And Karen has been fantastic. Oftentimes I have some funny stories with Karen sitting on the Dash 8s up to Ottawa early on, including a a ceiling that started to leak water that I was catching in my hand so it wouldn't get on her to throw out into the aisle. We have some random stories, her and I. I respect her so greatly because, much like Peter, she talks to people the same no matter the position they hold. So whether they're serving her sandwich in the cafeteria or they're a minister of the crown, she speaks to them the exact same way. And Karen is good people. And we have got so much done. Karen and Peter worked hand in hand on the water issue that we had with one of the indigenous communities here in our region. They've worked together on so many different files, including infrastructure, including various different things. I could go on and on about the work that they've done together, but she's always put the partisanship aside, as has Peter. That's not always the case with different MPs. It is in their soul to be partisan. And Karen is just, she's in it for all the right reasons. And I really want to pay homage to the work that she's done on the human trafficking file, because she has gone from coast to coast to coast in her role on that committee. And that's what she'll be remembered for, I believe. I believe when Karen is done with politics, that people will look back at the work that she did on that committee and see, because I've heard from, as Jen, you talk to them all the time, but many of the organizations and advocates that work on human trafficking issues and the file in general, both in policy and in the daily service, they've talked to Karen. They know Karen. They've seen Karen and met with them face to face.
Literally everybody that I work with across the country
Knows who Karen Vecchio is. And that's a testament to her. Mm-hmm. And, I really want to say that, thank you to her for that work, because we know we have a massive human trafficking problem here in our region. And the women beside me have obviously worked on that, and one of which is working on it, day and night as in her career. I'm just frankly heartbroken for her, because it's really what a lot of people don't understand too, is that when something like this is done, it's not easy to walk down the halls of Parliament. Like, it's not easy when everyone from the other side is coming up to you saying, this sucks. And yeah, you've seen all the comments from Liberals, from NDPs, from the Bloc, for crying out loud, yep, saying that this is terrible. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone knows, but none of the opposition parties on that committee voted to appoint the new chair. They all abstained. They all abstained. Yeah. So just by default with the Conservatives, yeah, they got the appointment through. And for those who are like, well, wait a minute, why are the Conservatives chairing this committee? There's certain committees in Ottawa that are chaired by an opposition member, and this is one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's why Karen was in that role. So it really sucks, because if she had done something wrong, that's a different story, which she did not, right? Like, when the chair's removed for just saying something idiotic, or not doing the job, or turning the committee into a circus,
or has gone to some other committee, yeah, or whatever.
Exactly, or whatever. Yeah, like, yeah, that's fine. Like, that's a totally different thing. But this came out of nowhere, and frankly, this is solely because Karen doesn't want to do Polyev style politics and doesn't want to turn every committee into a circus. And she knows that, though Karen is a conservative to her core, and she will tell you that Karen is a conservative, but she knows that there's important work being done on that committee, and that that committee in particular isn't the place for the garbage of politics, that I call it, with these silly little motions that mean nothing to the important issues that it's undertaking. So I just want to say that for her, Karen Vecchio will go down as a great member of Parliament, a great constituency MP. Frankly, I consider her a friend, basically, that in politics, because friends in politics are different than friends out in the real life. We're kind of all in this circus together, and you know the ones that you can trust and have good conversations with. And I know that my boss holds her in very, very, very high regard, and they work very, very well together. So one thing I'm very confident, though, is that Karen's going to continue to do the work, and she's going to continue to deliver for Elgin, Middlesex, London, or whatever her riding's going to be called in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, and I'm not going to ask this question. I'm just going to say it. Mm. If I were Karen Vecchio, I wonder how much longer I'd want to do this after what just happened. Mm. Karen Vecchio's been an MP since 2015. It's a pretty long time. I'd be wondering how much longer I'd want to do this.
But can I answer that, but can I just add something to that?
Yeah.
One thing, it would be an awful, awful, awful shame if we lost Karen Vecchio. I just want to say that. And that's a liberal in theory saying that. You know, I, like I said, I don't agree everything that my party does. And I've said on this podcast many times, I'm in my job working for the person, less for the partisan purposes, because I believe in my boss fully. But it would be a great loss, because I've just seen her cross-party collaboration, the ability to work across the aisle, the ability to respect people. And it would be awful. But I get where you're coming from.
What's left to do?
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. It'd be sad. But I really hope she looks, if that were to be the case, one thing I hope Karen looks for some other aspect of public service, because it's just a massive loss for her area. And for this country.
Absolutely. Well,
Karen, if you have anything you want to get off your chest, I know a guy. it's frustrating. I want to talk about a couple other stories before we wrap up here on the podcast today. One of them is about the Thames Valley District School Board, and there's an ongoing problem with violence at local schools, and that's not a secret to anybody. I don't think anyone's going to be shocked to hear about that. And of course, trustees, who are people that we elect, want to have some questions answered about that. I think that makes all the sense in the world. So these trustees asked staff at the Thames Valley District School Board, hey, can you get up some numbers and figure out what would, you know, how much violence we're talking about here and what we can do to deal with this and so forth. And the response from the staff at the school board, highly paid, we're talking sunshine-less staff here, was, well, this would be a lot of work. I cannot wrap my head around that, Mojde. I can't. Like, you know, like we're talking about, this is not some sort of like periphery issue. This is violence in schools. It's a legitimate problem. And if the staff is saying, well, that's a lot of work and I don't know if I want to do it, like what the hell's going on over there?
No doubt. First and foremost, anyone involved with the school board in any way, shape, or form, whether you work there, you have a child there,
and that applies to all of us.
Yeah, should care. And I'll tell you why this is such a dangerous thing to brush off as it's too much work. What's even more dangerous is their lack of care and effort to do their jobs, quite frankly. And I don't want to sound abrupt, and I'm sure they do their jobs in other areas, but it's a complete fail when you look at, and it, you know, there isn't an attempt to recover this in a really good way so far. There's no consistency across the same school board, how schools are capturing these incidences. And how that puts everyone at a disadvantage is, from the worker perspective, no one deserves to go to the job expecting violence and not having any avenue to increase their safety or maintain their safety even, and to support the person that's in crisis. These are children in crisis, I understand that. These are children, we're talking about multiple factors. And it's ludicrous that first and foremost, there isn't a uniform and consistent way this data is being captured with the board like we have. And it's even, it's just really startling that that we're thinking it's too much work and not seeing the weight of this.
So the superintendent of student achievement, Dennis Wright, according to the Free Press, said that some schools have never made a safe school incident report.
That is so vile.
The hell is that?
It is so vile. You go and speak with a teacher's assistant or an ECE at a school or a teacher themselves, and they will say almost on a daily basis, they either witness and are caused harm psychologically by what they're witnessing happen to themselves and their colleagues and the children in these schools. And this is what happens when you have unqualified people run an entire ministry.
School board staff, the whole thing. Dennis Wright, by the way, makes $221,000 a year. Like, I just feel as though I need to add that in. Like, I don't think that's an unreasonable add-on. Like, you know, you're making a lot of money. If someone says, hey, can you get me some data on how much violence there is at school? You made enough cash that you can probably go do that. Mark Fisher also said, according to the Free Press, he's the director of education at Thames Valley District School Board, much of the data being requested is not easily accessible, so it requires effort from the research and assessment department. Okay,
then
put
the effort in.
Yeah.
One avenue is they can ask the unions. They may have captured the.
Yeah.
I know they have a far more consistent, you know, way of capturing these incidences, but it is just such a disservice to parents, the students, everyone involved, this community. It's absurd.
And like we have to, so for our ministry, we have to report a lot of information. I'm sure that's no different for the Ministry of Education, right? Like there's certain things they're going to have to report, probably education-based or whatever, however that goes off into whatever.
That's the way it works. Yep.
So if there's like, wouldn't anybody at, like, I mean, anybody notice that maybe there was a trend or a gap or anything with violence in schools and then think about the way that they can capture that data to report on it, to do something better and awareness and put money toward it, whatever. It doesn't make any sense, you know? And you had mentioned ask any TA, ask any whatever. Mm-hmm. Also ask any parent any story that they have heard. There was, I'm not going to say any identifying information here, but there was something that happened at my kid's school and I knew enough to go to, you know, the VP about it and talk about what the school was going. It didn't involve my kids, but I was like, I'm not going to just sit back.
Push it off, yeah.
And I was told this is a community issue, not to worry about it. And it's like, how many times is that happening?
Yeah.
You know, if it, the school is in the community, hello,
yeah,
then the school should be a part of it too, which means proper. And maybe that speaks to a bigger issue. Maybe there's not enough time in the day for whoever is supposed to collect this data to do it and report back or whatever, then you need to be looking at that too.
You need to make the, sorry to interrupt, you need to make the time, right, on something like this. Like, and I very much believe they probably don't have enough time to do it because there aren't enough resources and people in the schools, but they have to make the time, right? And
absolutely.
And it's just not an option. And sorry, before I jump, I just want to make sure I didn't just
cut
you off
there.
No,
please go, it's fine.
So I think that to build on what Jen said too is, my son is in grade one. Now, albeit I'm in a different board, my son's in the Catholic system. We're not going to get on that debate today, Craig.
But you don't have to.
Okay, another podcast. Yeah, yeah. We had a bullying issue with my son being bullied early on. I was bullied as a child. And I was like hell, I'm going to let this happen, right? Like, it was awful what I went through as a kid. So I immediately stepped in. And because you have to advocate for your child. But to your point, Jen, too, when I'm on that call, I'm also advocating for all the kids because though it might be happening to my child in this moment, it's going to be happening to the next kid the next day, right? And I had a phenomenal conversation with the teacher who was not on the yard at the time, but she would look into it. She was great. She reported back to me. And but she did say that the schools were just that the school that my son is at was just flooded with 300 more kids that from when he was in kindergarten to when he was in going into grade one because they had to redistribute the population. So the fact of the matter is that more needs to be done, and it shouldn't have. Though it's going to have to be to some extent advocacy by the parents on when these issues arise, these need to be for the majority of them stamped out right there and then, because if not, it kind of becomes a little bit of the wild, wild west. And what I had a problem with, Craig, is frankly, I think that in that meeting, it was a bit of a breakdown in communication and people who are in academic positions but aren't thinking about the words that are coming out of their mouth and how they're going to play in the media. Because I kind of, when I read the director's comments, I kind of took from it that he's saying this is going to be hard to get and that the data is going to be hard to interpret because there's so many inconsistencies, right? Mm-hmm. Which is fair. So then the underlying problem then is let's fix that, right? Like instead of maybe the report isn't the right thing right now to produce because it's going to tell a skewed or fractured picture. Instead, how about we streamline this and fix the policy and properly train these schools? And if then we find out that school A and B cannot do these reports because they don't have the staff, then get them the staff. Mm-hmm. Like get someone in charge of that and make it happen. Because I want to say this is that, you know, the board here oftentimes gets a lot of flack, and rightfully so. I'm not saying, like, let's be honest.
I'm one of the chief flackers.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say, full disclosure, I know some people in there, including the chief legal counsel of the TVDSB.
And I also know that person.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I know that person is above reproach. I would go through a brick wall for that man and walk across broken glass. So I know
but
that
like if they went to Ali Chabar and said, "Hey Ali, we need some legal data here," and Ali said, "Oh, that sounds too hard."
Well,
he would never say
that. And that's just he's an extraordinary human being. Yeah. So that's why I know that again, I chalk this more up to really poor communication and not a lack of wanting to keep the children safe. I want to be very clear about that, right? Yeah, and I'm not saying that you're intending to say that. Let me be very clear. However, again, unfortunately, the board shoots itself in the foot on communications. And you hear me say this on the show all the time. So many other organizations in this community do that as well. The communication part of it is what's lost. And so while I get that there's a lot of people upset about this, what I do think needs to be done is forget about the report for a second. Let's go back to Moj's point. Let's talk about the system. Let's get the unions involved. Let's talk about where the gaps are and let's fill those gaps in so that we can fix this and then put a motion forward to report back in 365 days or 6 months, whatever you choose, to see if that's being worked on.
Yeah. So, the system by design, sorry, Craig.
No, go ahead.
The system by design, thank you for that comment, Ryan, was set up this way. Because if they had consistent data, then they would have to address it. I'm not saying that they have an agenda against our children and they don't want to keep the children safe. When you have a province that's cutting back on school boards to the extent that what's happening right now, it's a trickle-down effect of really not prioritizing safety. It cannot be the first time they heard this. Mm-hmm. I know my friends at QP and ETFO and OSSTF are constantly speaking to safety. It's not the first time these officials have heard this.
And
they're not taking a legal approach. They're not taking a PR approach. They're simply stalling. Sorry, Craig,
no, it's
last
okay.
point. Stalling, having to action what has been demanded by workers from the beginning of time is no worker deserves to go to work and face violence. Sorry.
Yes. No, do not apologize at all. I think that that's a good way to frame it. Because you're right. This is like these trustees are not the first people to say, hey, this is a problem here. And even during the last several rounds of negotiations with the province and these unions, this has come up. So why are we not tracking this properly is an excellent question. And are we not tracking it properly to deliberately obfuscate how big a problem this is? Maybe that is something we're doing.
I don't know about that. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I honestly think that we have to keep in mind, too, that it is the second biggest school board in the entire province, only next to the Toronto.
And it shouldn't be.
Yeah, no,
and
you're right. It should not be, but it's massive, right?
Yeah.
So I know, I don't believe this is kind of like, let's bury our head in the sands. I really don't. I think what it has to do too, and frankly, Cheryl Miller, I'd love to have Cheryl here to add to this well, because she was a former trustee and she always talked about how she believes currently the trustee model is broken, right?
And
she is right? So I really think that it's the whole governance of the school boards that needs to be looked at. I honestly think there's so many things happening in this board that's a bit of whack-a-mole. They're trying to keep everything functioning. And I think that, and where I think the legitimate argument could be made would be like that is understandable, but this issue can't be one of the things that's falling through the cracks.
Right.
I think that's what we need to properly advocate for, is that yes, you are very busy. Yes, there's a lot of things going on. Yes, you are way overcrowded. We don't have enough schools. There's not enough teachers. I can go on and on with situations they're dealing with. That being said, this needs to become a priority. So either A, shift resources to accommodate it, or find a way to hire an external firm to come in and address it.
Here's the only reason I say that maybe there's some deliberate obfuscation going on, is there's a pattern with that with this administration of the board. We've seen that a few times on a few different stories where, you know, things that are poorly communicated enough to the point where it's like, are you like deliberately muddying the waters here?
So you just hit the nail on the head again.
Yeah.
Was for me, communications. So again, I've worked in organizations and Craig, you even know in politics, I do things way differently in my day job than other people do. When you call, I pick up. Mm-hmm. And when you say I need to speak to Peter about an issue that maybe is not going to make Peter or the government look great, you still get the interview, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of communications professionals in this community who at the sniff of any controversy, they avoid it. But what they don't realize is Craig, being a journalist, like many journalists, actually take offense to that and will dig deeper and get angrier and keep going, because then they're like, you're proving his point that there's a story. So I actually do chalk this up to, I don't know enough about, my dealings with Director Fisher have been like, twice in my life, so I have very little to deal to say that I know him or know how he deals. So could it be that? Maybe, but I actually just believe he is a man running the second largest school district in the entire province, going in a million different directions, relying on staff to tell him comment on this, don't comment on this, talk about this, don't talk about that. Where I think he needs to look at though is, to your point, how these are landing, and it's consistently landing badly. And he needs to say, okay, we need to do something different. So that means that maybe I need to answer more questions about this. Maybe this is a bigger problem. Maybe we need to just frankly open things up. So again, I draw the line to there to communications, and I believe that that's where the breakdown is happening. But to your point, it's looking like you're hiding something.
Well,
it is.
I think if Kelly Elliott were here, she may have some.
Fair enough. And again, and she has a much different lens on this than I would with her previous experiences, right?
So, last thing I want to say though on that, if there was a six-figure staffer in Ottawa that Peter asked for, hey, can I get some data on this? Do you think that staffer would ever respond, that seems like a lot of work?
Yes, they actually have.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
But it doesn't go over well. I'll say that much. Yeah. No, well, because let us be honest, bureaucracy is going to be bureaucracy, right? Yeah. We have that happen all the time where they think they can put their heels in and dig deep. So then it really comes to the minister in that role or the politician, whether it be a committee or if they are a minister running their thing. So yes, it does happen, but the real testament is how does that politician respond? And if they're like, well, I'm here representing Canadians, you will get me that data, then you will get that data. Because if you don't, you see some of the things that happen when people don't want to be forthcoming with information is they get called to the bar of the House of Commons, or they get put through the ringer at committee. So yes, it does happen, but it doesn't normally end well.
Yeah, that's fair. One more story I want to talk about before we wrap up here, and that would be the Twitter account of a London City councillor. And you know what? I'm loathe to talk about this because we haven't talked about it on the show for a long time, but there's always something going on with Councillor Stevenson in Ward 4. And here's the thing. I think sometimes we move past, hey, people have different opinions, because like people have different opinions, that's fine. In fact, I highly encourage that among elected bodies. But some of this stuff seems like it's just deliberately trying to start fires and trying to cause difficulty. Jen, this impacted you this week, and you had a Twitter thread about it. Was it Sunday night? Was it Monday? I was on vacation.
It was Sunday.
It was Sunday night. So
midday. I was grocery shopping. and I started receiving text messages with screenshots saying, your name is... And I'm like, oh, gosh.
So, for starters, just clarify what was said about you and then how you responded.
So, Councillor Stevenson had posted on Twitter, or X, whatever. We can say
doesn't
whatever.
Matter.
Okay.
I'm going to call it Twitter until the day I die.
Same. Yep. So, say you tweet. Exactly. I don't know, like, whatever. Yeah. Talking about... London, Ontario being against body rub parlors, but London, Ontario being okay with street level sex work, like trying to understand the city stance. And then she used a quote of mine from the Free Press and then went on in a tweet later on in the thread, said something about the London Abused Women's Centre position and whether or not she was fit to be a city councillor and all of that stuff. And so, you know, for me, I don't usually want to engage on Twitter, because for me I'm like, if you have questions then contact me directly, let's talk about this so that we can, you know, I don't know, like let's have a conversation, let's not post on social media. But my problem on Sunday afternoon was that if there were any women that could potentially be looking for somewhere to access service on a Sunday afternoon and saw you know, that the London Abused Women's Centre might be against a woman who is in the sex trade that needs support, and then that woman doesn't show up to our organization because we might not support them, that's unbelievably harmful. Mm-hmm. So I had to say something. And so what I said was that the point that's missing in the conversation, or lack of conversation, the posts on Twitter, was meeting women where they're at, regardless of if, and I posted about this, and I brought this into it because I think it's really important, regardless of if a woman shows up to access service and says, you know, they're living with their abuser, they cannot leave their abuser, but they want to live safely with their abuser, we're not gonna say, listen, we're not gonna help you because you're living with your abuser. Or if a woman is involved with the sex trade and in the sex trade and does not want to leave the sex trade, or believes that it's her choice to be there, she's choosing to do it with her own free will, that's also okay. Or if a woman is choosing not to report sexual assault, that's also okay. So why the hell are we not meeting women where they're at? Mm-hmm. right? And so that was the whole point of my tweet back, because I think there's been, and there has been for many years, this kind of narrative in the city that the London Abused Women's Center will only support women if they do this, this, and this, or don't do this, this, and this. And that's simply not true. We have always met women where they're at and supported women with whatever they're doing or wherever they choose to be in life, with whatever their journey is. And so that's why I ended up responding to that. And then I'll tell you, right after I responded to it, I emailed Susan Stevenson and asked for a meeting. And she wrote me back and said yes to a meeting. So we're going to be meeting in the next couple of weeks to talk about this. But then there was also a tweet back, which I do not believe was fully written by Susan Stevenson, which is fine. That's another story. And the tweet back from Susan Stevenson at that point was wanting to engage more in what the London Abused Women's Center's positions were. And I'm not responding to any of that, because I think the response to meeting women where they're at is the response. And it's not a matter of whether or not, you know, we agree with supporting exit strategies for those that are in the sex trade or providing safety for women that are in the sex trade. You have to do all of the things. You can't just...
So your answer is, do you support exit strategies or do you support safety? The answer to that is yes.
Yes. Yeah. It's literally options. All of the things. Yeah. How could we not? We would literally never not welcome a woman through our doors. If they're like, no, we're not wanting to exit right now. Great. Let's keep you safe.
Yeah. Let's provide
it
services.
Doesn't make sense any other way. And so that's why I chose to engage. That's why I chose to engage on Twitter. And that's why I requested a meeting, because that's what we need to talk about. And I hate, and I can't stand when the quote that was used in her tweets made sense.
Yeah.
And was the message, like the message that I had to say in that quote is what I would have said now as well, but the way she used it was incorrect.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I interrupt. Please continue.
No, that's it. Actually, one more point.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry.
No, I interrupted you. Sorry.
And I think the point of using that was really to pit organizations against each other. And we absolutely cannot have that, because the organizations in the City of London are working so well together. And the community
organizations like Safe Space, Innova,
Safe
Lock,
Space, Innova, yeah. Changing Ways, Women's Rural Resource Center, the Muslim Resource Center, CMHA, literally everybody, we're all working together. Yeah.
This is a perfect... Yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No,
you were next in line.
I was just going to say, I wanted to say thank you for requesting a meeting with Councillor Stevenson. Mm-hmm. The reason I want to say that is because I said it before we went on air, and I said it on air on something else. What really drives me bonkers is the fact that we get into these Twitter wars and back and forth, and then there's never that engagement offline,
yeah.
right? It's
yep.
so easy to fall into that trap. We've all done it, and mm-hmm. and it's so easy. And I'm always like, we need to talk about this. And mm-hmm. and one thing I will say is, full disclosure, I'm close with Councillor Stevenson. We sit on the Police Services Board together. I work very well with her. I really respect Susan from the sense of that we have differing views and we can always have a conversation. We have very differing views on many, many different things, but we've always been able to have a respectful dialogue and agree to disagree on certain issues, passionately agree to disagree. For example, on safer supply, we passionately disagree on these issues, but we've had good dialogue on that. And one thing about Susan as a colleague on the police board and other things is, Susan isn't the type that will never move off a position. She has always been to say, I didn't look at it that way, and that's a very good point, and you've convinced me. And then on other things, she's like, sorry, I can't. But she can have that dialogue. Again, you want to talk about social media, that's a whole other ball game. But what I will say is that...
Because it came off to me as like, no. I'm looking to fight everybody. This
yeah,
week.
And
it wasn't just
yeah.
Jet.
Yeah,
and is it a ball game or is it a dumpster fire?
Fair enough.
Because I'm like...
Well, no, and social media and I'll be honest with you, social media is a dumpster fire. That was my other point. There is no winning. But I will say that mm-hmm. I thought the response was warranted, because left out there just on its own is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that I'm so happy, because I really actually think that you'll leave that meeting and say, hey, I think something was really accomplished there. Because I will tell you that I did set up a meeting between her and I'm not going to say what organization, but another organization in the community that differences were having. And I heard from both that it was a great conversation. And they actually are on better terms and can see things more productively. They still greatly disagree on a couple topics. But I will say that what we all have a responsibility to do, and I think in what you did in your tweet actually, is turn the temperature down and get the venom out of social media, right? And I think it's so critically important, because what it gets lost in that are the women mm-hmm. that you're serving. They don't have time for the garbage of social media. So I think that the conversation's really good. And I think that always keeping women at the center mm-hmm. and making sure that the service providers that they're serving, whether you agree with their service model delivery or not, or what have you, you know, again, I know what I know and I know what I don't. So I'm gonna go to the experts in an area and I'm gonna talk to them about it and try to understand. So just because you say I don't like what X organization does or Y organization does, my next question to you is, have you gone and talked to them about why they do it that way? Mm-hmm. And if you haven't, then I don't really want to hear from you. But I will say this, I'm not surprised to hear that she accepted it. A lot of politicians that like to tweet and run don't ever respond to those emails. So mm-hmm. I'm very hopeful that it's a productive conversation afterwards.
Yeah, me too.
I hope so too. But I do want to, before Mojde comes in, and I want to make sure I get your thoughts on this too. It wasn't just you, and it mm-hmm. wasn't just, you know, Inova or Safe Space that was part of the mm-hmm. the tweet storm this week.
Yep.
There was stuff about Old East Village, and there were photos of carts outside. Mm-hmm. You know, it just felt like this was a desire to fight with a lot of people this mm-hmm. week.
And do you think it...
And I don't know why. And I'm actually hoping to see if she'll come on the podcast next week to talk about it with me.
Well, do you think it has anything to do with the funding ending in May for some of these organizations and like trying to... I don't know. Yeah. There's so many thoughts I have. Maybe that... Yeah.
Mojde, your thoughts.
A couple of things. This is what happens when less than 25% of Londoners come out to vote. This council is faced with a really deep problem. Not enough people cared about who was running and who's in charge of the city at this point. Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. This mm-hmm. is not an election. This past municipal election is nothing that anyone should be proud of.
Yeah. Oh, 25% voter turnout is objectively bad.
It is.
And part of that was a sleeper of a mayor's race. And there's a bunch of different factors.
I thought it was exciting.
The voter turnout was absolutely disappointing. And what we need, why it's important in this conversation is that when you don't have enough people caring, our standards for politicians decline. I have higher standards, and I think that Ms. Stevenson is unfortunately doing a great disservice in the rhetoric that she keeps driving forward, the very divisive and you know, rigid narrative around a couple of things. So there's this part that's on my mind, and then the other side of this is that this is a clear example of lateral violence. Although we have gender diverse folks amongst the people that are constantly on the target board for Ms. Stevenson, it's unfortunate that lateral violence is being carried out in municipal politics. It's not a surprise. It's just unfortunate that it's happening right before our eyes and no one's really naming it. And you know, the issues that are tackled by Ms. Stevenson online in a reckless and disrespectful way, like taking photographs of loved ones. Like, can you imagine, right? We talked about this on this podcast before. Can you imagine being a loved one of an individual that is photographed by Ms. Stevenson?
Yeah.
No, to what extent? Yeah. And can you imagine that?
That's been adjudicated. I don't know if adjudicated is the word, like yeah. through that process, and I don't believe it's happened. Has it happened again?
No.
Nine-year-old asks for consent before taking photos of people. Yeah. My 9-year-old does. So I think that we can say.
The troubling part of that was, A, obviously the photos are troubling, but there doesn't seem to be any recognition that there was a mistake made there.
And I have not seen any recognition of a mistake, unfortunately.
I asked her obviously the week that this came out, and if she was going to come on the podcast, she didn't want to. That's fine. I'm going to try to get her on next week.
I'm sure she will. But you know what? I think you've said a lot of interesting and insightful things, Mojde. And you have a great lens on this, and you have a lot of experience in the area, and you know what you're talking about here. And what I would say, and again, I come back to this, is what it's everything that's broken in, not just in London, across this country, when it comes to political discourse, and there's politics involved in this too, let's be honest, right?
So, of course.
So like, let's not forget that elephant in the room. But I think, again, to your point, sitting down with Susan and having that conversation, I will say that I've had like significant debates on matters. And again, around safe supply is one of them, right? And we don't agree on it, but it's always been a respectful dialogue that where learning has taken place and things have been tweaked, right? Is she going to completely come around to my view on a particular matter? No, and I'm not saying that this is going to be some sort of utopia. Let's hold hands and sing kumbaya. But I think what it is that, and again, we come back to this like, you're with me or you're against me argument. I think what we need to reframe on these type of things is doing kind of what Jen did and what I know you've done before in your previous work is come in and let's have a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Come in, let's have a conversation. Let's try to resolve this. And as Jen said, let's get this off of social media.
Sure.
Like, and let's say why, Susan, let's not put this on social media because it does this, no, right?
And so, trust, stay in your lane. Trust the people that's, would you go to a mechanic to get your hair done, Jennifer? Your luscious hair. Would you do that? I wouldn't.
No.
So, stay in your lane. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, hands off vulnerable nonprofits. Mm-hmm. Those are my request mm-hmm. to Ms. Stevenson is hands off of the nonprofits. That's not your lane. Yeah. You do not manage
so
these nonprofits.
But here's the thing. It's sort of kind of like a little bit is, and where I think why the conversations are so important is because they're coming to the city for funding that she has to vote on, right? So
let's handle this on the council floor.
Correct.
That's
but
it.
What I encourage What I encourage people to do is to have those conversations before it goes to the council floor, so that she has that information
sure.
in front of her. Maybe she'll ignore, I'm not gonna speak for Susan, I don't know, maybe she'll ignore it, right?
Yeah.
But I think that you're right, the operation of the organization, 100%.
Yeah.
But some of these, to your point, Jen, I believe end of May it's coming back for funding, is that correct?
Safe space, yeah.
For a determination. So having these conversations beforehand.
Antagonizing these vulnerable nonprofits is gonna serve
right.
to her advantage.
And I'm all for hey, let's try to make sure we're getting the best bang for our buck here. Let's figure this out at City Hall. Let's figure this out in council chambers. Mm-hmm. Let's not figure it out by posting some photos on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No,
and that's where I'm at on that.
Greg,
that's a legitimate position to have. Absolutely. Yeah.
May I make a request for one question?
Absolutely.
I'm so curious because no one's ever asked Ms. Stevenson this. Why is this your approach to municipal government?
Yeah.
Why is this your approach? Is this the best way you can represent your writing?
Yeah, that's fair. I want to just say one thing quickly because I know people are going to probably ask me this. Why did Jen get to come on this podcast and Susan not? Jen was booked to come on this podcast weeks ago.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. I was booked before, but Craig screwed it up and mixed up the days that I was supposed to be on. It was a whole thing.
That is completely factual.
A month in the making.
We were all talking about how we found it very interesting that we weren't on the inaugural Market podcast.
Yeah, it was very unfair.
Just saying.
I inadvertently booked four guests for that Market podcast. Okay. And as you can see, there are four. Because I said to Jen, okay, yeah, come do the 12th. But then when I wrote in my calendar, she was doing the 26th. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
It proves your
now.
Point.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
I was
yeah, yeah.
yes, I was pre-scheduled.
And Craig screwed up. That was the other important point.
I just had to throw that in there. You know.
I like the accountability, Craig.
Yeah.
It's good.
But anyway, I do want to talk about it next week, and I know that people aren't going to like it. Don't give anyone a platform, but everyone deserves a chance to have their.
I agree with that.
If we don't have conversations, we're never going to get anywhere, right?
Okay.
So, I think that education needs to happen and conversations need to happen. That's why I just want to come back to again, Jenna. I think how you handled that is exactly what we need to do, right?
Yes.
And if it doesn't result in anything from there, well then other determinations
still,
have
like
to be made how to exactly
yeah.
then determinations have to be made on how to engage but mm-hmm. I think that is the way to go. Respond, ask for a meeting accepted, have meetings, see if things change.
Yes,
which I think is the only way that we're going to move forward.
Mm-hmm. We'll leave it there unless anyone else has anything they want to say on that particular subject.
This couch is very comfortable. I'll say
yeah,
this is a great setup.
I'm about to do an afternoon show on Classic Rock 98.1 about 7 feet that way. If you want to stay for the rest of the afternoon, you're more than welcome.
I mean, stop.
It's just like have a nap.
I'm going to go get lunch at the Market. Yeah. Thank you very much to Ryan and to Jennifer and to Mojde for being on the Craig Needles podcast and the Friday Roundtable this week. Of course, the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by our friends here at the Covent Garden Market and over at downtown London. You can find us at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca, plus wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for listening to this edition. We'll be back on Tuesday.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.